welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, and wow, just think about, and really think about this. Think about how much differently you and all of us are viewing the world right now as Bucks fans today compared to this time 1 week ago after the Buccaneers' stunning, and I do mean stunning, 48-40 win over the New Orleans Saints on Sunday. And I don't mean stunning that they won. I thought they could win, but I was truly stunned at the manner of what took place and how the Buccaneers won that game and their approach to the game and all things that, I mean, I've been craving as a Bucs fan, as a football fan for several years now. We got them and more. We'll talk about that on the show today. Thank you for joining us here on the Free Stretch. I am Bobby Fenton. As we record on middle day Thursday, we're right here, you know, getting ready for what I believe is the start of the weekend, pretty much. I think the weekend starts on Thursday afternoon. So just to give you a time reference of where we're at as we record here. And the Free Stretch is brought to you, of course, by Bill Curry Ford. If you go check out Bill Curry Ford, first of all, the website, BillCurryFord.com. You can check out everything you want to check out on there before you head in. And then if you go talk to new general manager Sean Sullivan, he's a true Bucks fan. He's a stick carrier. And there were tons of them in New Orleans on Sunday. You guys did a great job with the trip, Justin and the Joes and everybody else. And Sean invites all Free Stretch listeners and their families over to Bill Curry Ford to see the savings they are offering to the Tampa community. So like I said, go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. You can do this before you even go over there. Select the car you're interested in. And then if you just use the words, Joe Bucks fan, when you're over there, just got to mention the website. Just say, hey, Joe Bucks fan. $500 off, $500 savings. It is that easy. So go enjoy the Curry experience that's proudly served the Tampa community for 58 years now. Bill Curry Ford is just north of the stadium. It's on Dale Mabry. And of course, the website is BillCurryFord.com. Check them out. I say it every week, but I have great memories of doing my old radio shows there. We used to do shows there all the time. And I have another memory of being a young child and my mom shopping for what would later be our Ford that we ended up getting there. And you know how they have the showroom cars on the floor? And in the old days, I don't know if this is still this way now, but in the old days, like, some cars, if you honked the horn when the car was turned off, nothing happened. It would only be when the car was turned on. Now I think the horn always works. But when I was a kid, I remember thinking, I want to see if this is one of those cars or not. And we were in the middle of the showroom. There's like 100 people in there. And I just leaned on the horn thinking, it's not going to go off. And I just blasted the entire showroom. Like, everybody covered their ears. They turned and looked at me. And I was like 7 or something like that. I don't remember how old I was. But anyway, a lot of good memories at Bill Curry Ford. So check them out. In the meantime, what I want to talk about today on the show, and this is something, again, that goes beyond just the Buccaneers being 1-0. Because that's great. And the biggest underdog on the board, we talked about it on the show last week. And who's 1-0 now? The biggest underdog on the board for week one. But it wasn't just that they won the game or eked out some improbable win or got a couple breaks or things like that. It's that they took it straight to the New Orleans Saints in a manner as aggressive as I've ever seen a Bucs team play. I shouldn't say ever. Offensively, it could be made. That might have been the most aggressive offensive display. And I don't mean productive offensive display, although it was that too, as they tied the team record for points. But if you remember last week's show, and I was talking about an article by Thomas Bassinger, who's a writer for the Times, and we talked about how Dirk Cutter approached offense in his first 3 years. 2 as the Bucs head coach, and 1 as the play caller before that in Lovie Smith's final year. And how he had even said, you know, we're going to establish the run. We're going to run the football. We're going to let people know that's who we are, and we're not going to change our identity. And Bassinger had written an article about how just absolutely garbage an approach that is, especially in today's modern NFL, and how you really should be doing the exact opposite. And, you know, pass, 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 establish the pass. You win because you pass. You run because you're winning. You don't win because you run. And Cutter, in prior years, had cited all these statistics about, oh, well, the team that runs more wins so-and-so percent of the time. And they're all true until you look more deeply into them and realize, again, it's because teams that are winning run, not because teams that are running win. So we did a whole thing about that, and I got to tip my hat to Thomas Bassinger because, I mean, the stuff he wrote last week was so spot on, it almost seemed as if it was written after the game on Sunday, because the Bucks did exactly the opposite of what we've been so used to seeing them do over the years, and it produced incredible results. First drive of the game when the Saints had the ball, and they all just went through the Bucks like a sickle through a ripe wheat field. It was 7-0 before you could get the popcorn bag open. Bucks came right back down, and I know it's week one. I'm not going to try and react to a week one win, much less a week one play, but the big touchdown pass to DeSean Jackson after the Bucks had gone down 7-0 was such an enormous play, not just in that game, but psychologically. I mean, at that point, what were we all thinking when the Saints drove down and did what they did, and it was 7-0, and it took Drew Brees maybe two or three droplets of sweat to get that 7-0 lead? We're all thinking, oh, God, all right, it's early, but, you know, Bucks may not be good this year. They may not be that good for a while. Maybe the same old, and that could all still be true. It's just week one. But for Ryan Fitzpatrick and company to come right back out there and aggressively go downfield like that and hit that pass to Jackson, now it's 7-7, I was like, you know what? Screw it. Sure, we can do it too. We can beat these guys. But when I talk about the momentousness, if you will, of what happened on Sunday, again, it's not that I'm talking about the win. But how many times over the years, recently, have we complained about this Buck team getting down in the first quarter in the first half of games? I mean, last year they averaged 4.5 points in the first quarter of games, which kind of makes it amazing that they even won the games they won to average 4.5 points in the first quarter. They scored 14 points in the first quarter on Sunday. First down in the game, and this is big, and, you know, Todd Monken was calling the plays, as we came to find out. But it's not so simple as, oh, yeah, we needed Todd Monken to call the plays. Now we're doing things the right way. Dirk Cutter, it's still a game plan. It wasn't just a guy calling plays. Although Todd Monken did a fantastic job. And I imagine he's going to be the guy going forward calling the plays. But it wasn't like he just did something that Dirk Cutter wouldn't have done. Collectively, they had a different game plan. So the Buccaneers, prior to this game on Sunday, under Dirk Cutter, 60% run on 1st and 10. That was their usual MO, okay? And they threw sometimes on 1st and 10, but they ran the ball on 1st and 10 60% of the time. On Sunday, on 22 1st and 10s, they passed much more than they ran, as we said they needed to do. They had 14 dropbacks. Two of them ended up being scrambles by Fitzpatrick, but they were called passes. 14 dropbacks and 8 running plays. And on those 14 dropbacks, Fitzpatrick went 11 of 12, 203 yards, and a touchdown. And that's a fine day right there, just on first down. 8 of those 12 attempted passes on first down either went for a first down or a touchdown. And all told, the Bucs had 6 pass plays of over 30 yards. They had 18 of those all of last year. They've already gotten a third of their 30-plus yard pass play total from last year in one game. And look what happened. Then all of a sudden, the running game actually freaking works a little better on first down when they don't know for sure you're going to run it, because they did run on first down a few times in Peyton Barber. He was out there. He ran the ball. And he had 56 yards on first down. He averaged 5.1 yards per carry on first down. Because when you're not banging your head into a wall, as Dirk Cutter has referenced, and just handing it off out of rote habit on first down, you know, it's a big down. The thing about first down is it's one of the few plays, depending on the down and distance with the other, but I mean, first down is one of the few plays where the defense has to account for everything. Third and eight, they don't have to worry about the run. You know, second and long, usually that's not, first down, the offense could do anything. So that's one of those times when you can exploit a team in the secondary because, again, they have to account for the run more than they would when they've got their ears pinned back when it's third and seven or something like that. And the Bucks never, ever used to be that team. And as a Bucks fan, again, it was cathartic. And let's say they had lost the game. Let's say they hadn't been able to pull it out, or, you know, they lost a shootout or something like that. Even so, I really do mean this. As a fan, it was cathartic just seeing what appears to be, and I hope this holds, yeah, I hope it wasn't just a one-week thing, but what appears to be a monumental shift in approach, a monumental shift in philosophy of this football team. And if that's the case, I have high hopes not only for this team, but for this coaching staff, where I didn't necessarily have that the past 2 years. And it wasn't just, I mean, first down, it was a couple times, I remember it was third and two or third and one, and I'm thinking, okay, they're going to just go ahead and get the first down here. Didn't matter then. Fitzpatrick, he dropped back, just launching missiles downfield on third and short. It was great. I remember one time the Saints picked up a roughing the passer penalty that moved the Bucs into like field goal range or something. I'm thinking, okay, this is good. Next play, over the top, touchdown in the end zone. Off Saints penalties, off turn. We had a turnover one time. I forget which one it was. Next play, boom, downfield. And again, as a fan, I've craved that. And I've wondered why we didn't do that, why we didn't put more pressure on defenses, why we always seem to try and just know our place and just hope things came to us. And on Sunday, it was like watching a completely different team. And that, to me, is the main theme of this game. You know, I know we've already... One of the things with me doing my show on Thursdays is a lot of times, you know, all the recap stuff, and we've moved on from that. We're looking ahead to the next game, but y'all got to let me get this one out of my system, because that game on Sunday was about as satisfied of a win I can remember as a Bucks fan in the regular season. And it's only one win. It's only week one. They could still go 6-10 for all we know. I mean, honestly, like, what we know now is nothing compared to what we'll know in December. I did a whole spiel on the show last week talking about how, this is before the game, how, look, we have nothing to go on yet, so whatever happens in week one, we're going to overreact to it because it's the only thing we'll have to go on. There's no body of work yet. The preseason doesn't matter. People always overreact to week one because it's the first game, and to that point, it's the only game you have to go on. So you basically assign all your hopes and dreams to what you saw in that one game. I said that last week. Of course, when I said that, I kind of had in mind, hey, they might not win this weekend. You know, it's a tough spot to go into New Orleans. And now they look like they were, you know, Dan Fouts and the, you know, Air Coryell or whatever. Now we think they're going to go to the Super Bowl. But it still holds, all right? We don't know what's going to happen. But again, if philosophically that's where we're coming from as a team each and every week, I do have high hopes. I mean, I think it makes a big difference. And I think, as Thomas Bassinger wrote in his article this week after the game, what we saw on Sunday was, quote, a damning repudiation of traditional football thinking. Because it's no longer about, oh, well, you know, they have a good offense on the other side, let's keep them off the field. That anytime you hear a team say, oh, well, you know, we got to run the ball, we got to keep their offense off the field, that team's going to lose, okay? That means that team sucks, and they don't think they can fight fire with fire, and you can't win without doing that. Well, the Buccaneers, with Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback, absolutely took it straight back at the New Orleans Saints. And there's so much credit that goes around. I mean, everybody's talked about Fitzpatrick this week, and obviously that was as good as you could have hoped for from him. And he was very deservingly the NFC Offensive Player of the Week and all that stuff. We'll talk more in a little bit here about the whole Jameis Fitzpatrick thing, because, of course, now that he played like that, the whole, hey, Jameis isn't going to get the starting job back, that's been fired up again. That's still 100% bunk, I believe. But we'll get to that in a little while. It's not about that right now. Hats off to Fitzpatrick. The offensive line did a great job. And how nice is it? I mean, having a guy like Ryan Jensen, again, this is, again, not just a win, but an attitude change, an approach change. Because I love the nastiness. Even though he picked up a 15-yard flag, you know, like, didn't it feel different having a guy like him out there as far as the whole offensive line? And didn't it feel, I mean, to me, it kind of reminded me, I don't know how many of you are baseball fans and how many of you go back, you know, a few years with the Rays, but I remember the Rays, pretty much their entire existence before 2008, were kind of just a doormat. You know, nobody gave them much thought. They were just a team that, you know, filled up games for other teams on the schedule, and nobody cared about them. And then in 2008, in spring training, this is before we knew they were going to the World Series. 2008 ended up being the World Series year. But in 2008 in spring training, it was Johnny Gomes. They were playing the Yankees in a spring training game. And there was some sort of like high slide at second base or a collision at home plate. I forgot exactly what it was. But it sparked a brawl, and Johnny Gomes was out there. Like, I mean, for spring training, you don't ever see brawls in spring training, but it wasn't just one of those little, you know, patty cake things. And they got into it for a little bit. And Johnny Gomes was the catalyst. And Ryan Jensen kind of reminds me, he's got a little bit of that Johnny Gomes in him, because it's, you know what the attitude is? It's that, hey, you used to see Tampa Bay on the schedule, and you just pencil in your W and move on with your life and not even really look at it. You look to the next week's game, and that'd be, yeah, and hey, this ain't just a bunch of slap dicks anymore that you can just not even pay attention to and just circle in your W. They ain't gonna be that way anymore. These guys now, you might still beat the Bucks, but you better pack a lunch to do it. Because they're going to keep coming, and they're going to keep coming, and they don't care about where you are in the standings or where you think they're supposed to be in the standings or any of that anymore. That's the feeling I got, just seeing Ryan Jensen out there taking up for his guys, you know, not taking any crap from anybody on the Saints. Like, oh, we're supposed to genuflect because we're in the Superdome with Drew Brees, and we're supposed to just take our L and go home because that's the way it was. No, not anymore. Not anymore. That's what I felt. Yeah, it's easy for me to talk tough sitting on my couch watching on TV. I'm not out there on the field. But seeing not just Jensen, but all the guys, it just felt different. Did it not? Tell me if I'm wrong. Did it not just feel different on Sunday? And again, not just because they won, but because of what took place and how it took place and the aggressiveness and the attitude that, hey, we're right there with you now, okay? And we might even be ahead of you, and we don't care what happened before or what's supposed to happen or all those freaking predictions I read to you last week on the show that said 2-14, 1-15, which I still can't believe, even as little as we knew back, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen on Sunday then, but even then what we knew, it's disgraceful that anybody that gets credentialed media, you know, credentials actually put the Bucks down for 2-14. But anyway, my point all this is, it's a different mindset now. By the way, they scored on every drive that started with a pass. Now, that might be a little bit of a misleading statistic because they scored on almost every drive. Brian Anger was on the side of a milk cart until the end of the third quarter, whenever his first punt was. Man, it felt good. Now, it wasn't all pretty, okay? The defense, which, by the way, the defense, I'll say this for the pass rush. Drew Brees is really hard to get to. You can't expect a lot of sacks when you play him. And it's not like, you know, you base everything off of how many sacks they got. But the defensive line, the defensive front, was much improved. And they actually did get to Drew Brees a little bit later in the game. Which goes back to what? Hey, we're not playing from behind. They're the ones playing from behind. We're the ones who know they have to throw on every down. And now we can play that way. All those furious comebacks the Bucks would take part in last year because they were down 28-3 at halftime or whatever. And they'd always come back and lose like, you know, 38-35 or something. But still they would lose. Now that was the other way around with the Saints this weekend. The Bucks got out front. They traded blows for a while. But the opening drive of the second half, they were able to, again, aggressively go downfield and score, and it was the Saints who then were down by two scores, and that changed the complexion of the game. So they did get to Brees a couple times after that, but even before that happened, they pressured him, they moved him around the pocket, good showing by the defensive front. Of course, in the secondary, I mean, let's not lie, there's some concern, and that was before the injuries, which we'll get to in a minute. But 40 points for the Saints, 475 yards. If I had told you that before the game, you probably would have said, oh, well, I wasn't hoping that's what we'd get, but I'm not surprised that's what we got, and we lost, right? And I would say, no, actually, I'm from the future, and we won the game 48-40. By the way, 0-35 all-time were the Bucks when they give up 40 points or more. Which is actually a lot of games they've given up 40 points or more 35 times. They've only been around, that's like one a year almost. But no, 0-35 all-time were the Buccaneers when the opponent scores 40 or more until this past Sunday when the Buccaneers won 48-40. And the 48 points, by the way, tying a franchise record, I was tweeting about that during the second half on Sunday. And for those of you that didn't already know or haven't learned since then, the 48's kind of a magic number for the Bucks because it's one of those things, you know, they've done it a couple times before. They did it in 2001 also against the Saints, and they did it sometime in the 80s. I think it was against Atlanta, like 48-10, but I was a kid. My memory may be a little bit. But the point is, that was the regular season record. And they actually scored 48 points one other time. You might remember it. It was in the Super Bowl, 48-21 against the Oakland Raiders. They've never scored 50 before. So when Chandler Catanzaro trotted out onto the field when the Bucks were leading, at that point, I think it was 48-32, if I remember correctly. I thought about, it was kind of like a moment in time. I was like, wow, if he makes this, this is the franchise record and the first time the Bucks will have ever scored 51 points. And first of all, we needed the kick in the game to make sure the Saints couldn't come back. But second of all, I wasn't sure I wanted him to make it. Because, you know, there's certain records you kind of like and you like having them around. You don't want to see them go anywhere. I love the idea. I've always loved the idea of the record for points scored in a game for this franchise is the Super Bowl. Like, how cool is that? That the one game that's the most important in franchise history is also the one game you score the most points in franchise history. So if Catman had made that field goal to put it at 51, then the Super Bowl would have only been the second most points the Bucks have ever scored. So I was kind of honestly mixed emotions there. Then he missed the field goal, and 48 stays the magic number, and I'm okay with that, especially since the Bucks won. Although it left the door open, and the Saints would have been the first team to ever complete an 8-8-8 comeback in NFL history, if those of you, you know, that don't know. But the two-point conversion hasn't been around forever. I think they brought it in the early 90s, if I remember. And since then, teams have been down by 16 and scored a touchdown and a two and another touchdown and another two. That's happened. No one's ever gotten the 8-8-8, three touchdowns and three twos to come back from down 24. So that would have been the first one, and it was damn close to happening, but the defense stood up when they had to, and they got the job done. So, you know, just looking ahead to this Eagles game, and how much differently does everything look now? And this is why I cautioned you guys over the first month of the, you know, offseason, or the first month after we got the Jameis Winston news, and all through the preseason and all that stuff, because it just really bugs me. It really bugs me. Not when people make predictions, but it bugs me when people make declarations, and they make predictions sound like declarations. And so many people did that in the preseason, and I quoted you a couple of articles. I don't remember who the writers are, and they'd probably prefer that because they look pretty bad right now. One guy said, you know, oh, a likely 0-3 start, you know, could lead. Not a possible 0-3 start. He was writing an article about Jameis Winston's suspension, but he wrote, and the wording he used, it was just a little tiny thing, but I noticed it. He said, oh, now that the Bucks are looking at a likely 0-3 start, don't write that. Say that, you know, hey, an 0-3 start is in play now, or a possible 0-3 start. But he made it sound like, oh, they're going to go 0-3. Like anybody knows anything, don't make predictions sound like declarations. Make predictions all you want. I make predictions. I'm wrong all the time. That's fine. But I hate when people sound so sure and so smug that they make a prediction sound like, no, I'm saying this will happen. Say, I think this will happen. And so many people are 0-3. Oh, my God. So that's out the window, 1-0. Now we got an Eagles team coming in whose offense struggled against Atlanta at home on Thursday night of last week. And we've got a team that, you know, they're without Alshon Jeffrey. And, you know, we're dinged up too. But the point is, I don't know who's going to win at all on Sunday. Do you? No. And the Steelers could barely handle a Browns team that's 1-31 in their last 2 years. Now, I think the Browns are a lot better, and the Steelers still might be very good. But my point is, those first three games that were supposed to be such a murderer's row, and we didn't have Jameis win, that looks a lot different now, doesn't it? Because we feel like we have a quarterback who's competent, which I felt all along. And those three teams, one of them's already been vanquished and beaten, and the other two don't look so hot anymore. They certainly, at the very least, look like teams the Bucks can beat. And I don't mean that the Bucks are going to go 3-0. They could still very easily be 1-2. Okay, I have no idea. But that's the point. Just, we have no idea. And I'm fine with that. But looking at the Eagles and looking at how the Saints approached us, Drew Brees carved the Bucks up with mostly passes inside of 10 to 15 yards, which he's been doing. I mean, last year he did that a lot, too, to a lot of teams. And the Eagles right now at receiver, they got a couple guys that are either out for the year or out for this game, obviously with Jeffrey being one of them. Nelson Aguilar, a Tampa guy, is a guy who can beat you underneath. Mike Wallace is more of a down-the-field guy, but they've got those two guys, Zach Ertz. Those would be their three main receiving threats. And another guy, if you talk about throwing underneath, is Darren Sproles, who continues to defy expectations at his age. He's not that old, but he's getting up there. And yet he is as quick as he looks like he's ever been, So those are the four guys you have to look at for the Eagles. And then when you look at the injury report for the Bucs, it's an even more grim picture. Of course, we know about Vernon Hargraves now. He made a big play. That was a big play. The Saints were in red zone offense there, and they threw over the middle, which I believe would have been a first down had it been caught. Hargraves was trailing the receiver, but right behind him, reached around the receiver, backhand, knocked the pass away, and when he came down on that shoulder, and now he's out for the year because of that play. And that play probably saved the Bucs 4 points in that game. And the Saints kicked a field goal on that drive. But if he doesn't make that play, they probably score a touchdown. And he gave his season, basically, to make that play. And it's really unfortunate because Hargraves, you know, he had been obviously maligned a little bit for his play last year, but was right back in there this year and played pretty well, you know, in the preseason from what we saw, wasn't too bad. And then, of course, I thought played pretty okay on Sunday, and now he's out for the year. DeSean Jackson, of course, who was a huge, huge deep threat and made a lot of big plays for the Bucs on Sunday, is also now, he's got a shoulder thing, although it appears that's not nearly as big of a concern as him being in the concussion protocol. So he'll be okay, but will he be out of the protocol by Sunday, still up in the air? Two big losses there, especially the Hargraves in the secondary. It ain't like the Bucs have a million guys in the secondary to begin with. So now he's out. DeSean Jackson, very possibly out, though not officially out. Jason Pierre-Paul's got a knee that is quote-unquote jacked up. Those are his words. But he says he thinks and he hopes he might be able to play Sunday, but it's a big might. We have no idea. And Brent Grimes, who they really need. You know, we don't know what his deal is. And Vita Vea, who, you know, we've barely seen him in a Bucs uniform, also not there. So, you know, this is how it's going to be. I mean, it's the season now. Injuries start happening to everybody in the NFL of all sports. I always say, like, football, and obviously we've been through it a bunch with all the CTE stuff and all the controversy with football, but I really do think football is the perfect sport except for injury. Like, if you could somehow make people bulletproof and they just didn't get hurt, of all the sport, football's perfect. Like, it really is. But obviously, it's not completely perfect, and this is going to be an issue all year, and it's already starting to become an issue now. So if you want to email me, I haven't even given out my email address yet or my tweet. If you want to email me, love getting your emails, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, it's @bobbygameday. I'm still doing the fridge schedules. I've sent out a bunch of them. I'll do one more wave. So if you want a fridge schedule, and if you don't know, I type up a Bucs schedule real pretty with the logos, color, print, I mean, the whole thing. It looks really nice. I do it on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper because I like to have a nice big schedule on my fridge instead of just cutting it out of the newspaper. And I have it saved on a Microsoft Word file. So if you email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, I'll send you the Microsoft file. You can print it out. Again, color printer recommended. But whatever you want to do, you can stick it in your office, on your fridge, in your locker room, wherever you want to. And I tell you what's really satisfying, writing that X, 48-40. I do X's and O's instead of wins and losses because my grandma used to do that. So it's kind of one of the ways I remember her. And she was a huge Bucs fan, but she never wrote W and L. She always wrote X's for wins and O's for losses. So Sunday afternoon after the Bucs game, clicked the ballpoint pen, stood up there at my fridge, X, 48-40. Felt good, man. And I want to see a whole row of those X's down the line this season. It's been a long time. And I even put little spaces on the fridge schedule for the playoffs. I got the wild card weekend. I got the division. Everything's on there. I haven't even filled those in, you know, a decade. But they always put the space there every time, all the way up to the Super Bowl. Always put them there. So if you want one of those, email me. And then there's the whole cruise meter, which I've devised, and I need to find a way to make some artwork with it. But for those of you that had listened to the show every week, you know what I'm talking about, the cruise meter. I talked about this about 3 weeks ago for the first time. During the off season, my wife, you know, she wants to go on a cruise. She's been on them before. I've never been on one ever. So we're trying to figure out, you know, what's a good weekend for a cruise. Well, cruises aren't like airline flights where you can get one anytime, anywhere. And we want one that leaves from Tampa. So, you know, there's pretty specific dates, and especially for a certain destination or whatever. You have, you know, you can't just get one the next weekend. They could be months till the next one you want. So she sees one for the first weekend in January. And she's like, we got nothing going on this weekend, right? So I'm going to go ahead and book this. And I said, well, you know, that actually is wild card weekend, one of my favorite weekends of the year every year, bar none. And the Monday night after that is also the national championship game in college football. But other than that, yeah, sure, you know. And she's like, well, you know, these new cruise ships, you know, they, you can watch the games on them. They have sports bars. You're not, like, isolated. And I did some internet research because I've never been on one. And I confirmed that, yeah, they've got TVs and stuff. And I guess you can watch all the networks that you see back home. So I should be able to see any games. So I said, okay, well, that's fine. But there's one scenario where that could be a problem. What if the Bucks win the NFC South and it's a home playoff game? I don't mind watching a road playoff game on TV, although even that doesn't sit well with me because I like to be with my buddies and my family for that and have a party. But if the Bucks are in the playoffs on the road, okay, as long as I can watch it, that's fine. But if the Bucks are at home at Raymond James Stadium for a playoff game, I told her I'm not going. I mean, I don't care if we book it. I will back out and I will not miss a Bucks home playoff game. It's as simple as that. And she kind of like, oh, well, whatever. You know, she booked it anyway. So here we are now. And so now I got a meter. I even made a little, like, a little semicircle with a dial. I wrote it on my paper here, but I'll try and find some artwork to put with it. So the cruise meter on the left side, the low side where things are fine, I wrote Bon Voyage. That means we're going on the cruise. And then all the way to the right, you know, I wrote Enter Mediation, because basically my wife and I will probably, you know, have to do some sort of counseling or something to salvage our marriage if I back out of this cruise. So that needle, you know, in the off season was pretty close to the Bon Voyage side. Bucks weren't supposed to be very good. Needle's creeping up now. And I'm not saying the Bucks are going to win the NFC South. Again, I always caution, never overreact, never be reactionary, especially with a small sample size. But I'm looking at a Bucks team that certainly doesn't seem like a patsy anymore. They've already got a 1-0 record in their conference or in their division with a road division win. That always helps with tiebreakers. Saints team, obviously, that they've beaten once. Falcons didn't look so hot on Thursday. Matt Ryan can sack himself pretty much anytime he needs to. And I haven't been very impressed with Matt Ryan the past year. And then, of course, you've got the Panthers, who are, I think, a dark horse. I mean, they're, you know, but they're hardly unbeatable. So the Bucks' chances of winning the NFC South aren't just hideous. I'm not saying they have great chances of winning the NFC South. I'm just saying they're not hit. And the Saints could still end up going, you know, 13-3 or something, for all I know. But the needle's creeping up. We'll keep an eye on that. And I'm not backing down. Listen, I don't want to cause any problems in my marriage or anything like that. And I'm usually one to just kind of let my wife take control on the things that she wants to take control on. You know, it's usually not a big deal. But this one, there will be no compromise, okay? And we're looking way down the line here. I'm not even going to get there yet, but I'm not missing a Bucks home playoff game. Anyway, forget about that for now. I want to talk about the Jameis Winston situation a little bit, real quick, just real quick. Because I told you earlier in the show, and it was inevitable, and I like Ryan Fitzpatrick, but he played well on Sunday. He played more than well. He played fantastically. And so all the people talking about who comes back when the suspension ends, or let's call it week 5, because week 4 they were saying they might start Fitzpatrick even if he wasn't, you know, just because of the fact that it's a short week with the Monday night game. And anyway, is there any type of controversy after that? First of all, 100% there is not, in my opinion. But even further than that, I'm a big believer, and this has served me well in life sometimes, and other times it hasn't served me so well. But I'm a big believer either way, for better or worse, that in life, don't deal with something that hasn't come up yet. You know, you're thinking about, we're going to have this argument right now about, oh, well, what happens when Winston comes off suspension? When he comes off suspension in 3 weeks, or 2 weeks, whatever it is, then we can talk about it. But why would you even try to claim a position, certainly a hard line definitive position, why would you try and claim that now when there's still 2 weeks of data left? If Fitzpatrick plays the way he played on Sunday two more times, then we will have that discussion after the week 3 game on Monday night against the Steelers. If he doesn't play so well, conversely, we'll have that discussion. It may not be that difficult a discussion at that point, depending on what we know. Or maybe by the time we get to week 3, there won't be any clarity, and then we can have the debate. But why would you say now, oh, well, I think you got to start Fitzpatrick now. I don't think you have any choice. You don't have to say anything right now. Of course you have a choice. My choice is to watch the next 2 games, and we'll see what's going on after that. But if anything, it's not a problem. If anything, it's a really, really good situation to know the Bucs at quarterback are in great shape. We have two guys now, whether it's suspensions or injuries or whatever might happen, and even Griffin is pretty serviceable, but we got two guys now that I'm not going to say they're interchangeable because I think Jameis Winston is still going to be one of the best quarterbacks in football. I think that. I've said that before. It's how I feel. But it's no big deal if either of them were to start. Like, you don't feel like we can't win if either of them were to start. And Sunday was certainly a validation of that with Ryan Fitzpatrick. And so that's where I'm going to leave it right now. I'm not going to go any further about who's going to start or who's not going to start. I'm going to say, hey, we got two really good quarterbacks. We're in a really good spot quarterback-wise. There's a lot of teams in the NFL that barely have one quarterback, much less two. And when you look at what's most important in football, we're pretty short up there. That's where I'm at. It's just a demonstration of our strength at that position. Same with the wide receiver position. I mean, seeing DeSean Jackson now become the threat we all hoped he could be, the injury notwithstanding. Obviously, Mike Evans, and then Adam Humphries, O.J. Howard, Cameron Brait. Oh, Godwin, I forgot Godwin. Godwin made a great diving catch. He had a couple catches, but he had a great diving catch that gave the Bucs a first down in the middle of the field early in the game. And then he had the touchdown, which was a real great little tightrope job, and Fitzpatrick made a great throw. Like, the ball actually crossed over the pylon in the air, and Godwin, like, caught it and just shuffled in real. Just a beautiful play. I mean, to have all these guys combined with a competent offensive line and Peyton Barber, who's not running behind the eight ball like he and most other Bucs running backs have been for so many years because of the play calling, because of the way the Bucs approached offense. And like I said earlier in the show, it makes a big difference when you give your running backs a fighting chance. And when the other team doesn't know you're going to run on first down automatically, your running back has a fighting chance when you do run. So you put all that together, and this offense looks like it's going to be very formidable. And as long as you have that combined with a decent pass rush up front, I think you can win games in the NFL, even with the secondary being banged up and a little bit shaky. I think there's still so much we don't know. It's foolish to try and make any declarations right now, but that's where I think we're at. So, we'll see what happens with the Eagles game on Sunday. Bucks are a 3-point underdog. If I had given you a line on that game last week before the week one games happened, the Bucks probably would have been, they're at home, but, close to a touchdown or more underdog. And that ain't the case anymore. We'll see. I've also been told by a few people, hey, Bobby, you need to do two shows. You need to do a react show after the game, like on Tuesday, then do the regular free stretch on Thursday. Because, when you do, I do the Thursday show, everybody wants to move on. It's been 3 days of the other game being in the news. Now we want to move forward. But for me, it's my first crack at talking about it. So, I don't know. We'll see. I got a tough workload over here. Doing one podcast a week. But no, seriously, I'll see. Or at least I can do maybe a short thing on, Tuesdays if the Joes want me to give them something, just a quick reacts, and then still do the main show on Thursday. We'll see about that. If you have any thoughts on it or anything else, comments, questions, cushion, discussion, email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can hit me at bobbygameday. In any event, Sunday at 1, it's the home opener. Let's get out there. You know what? People have been talking about, how many Eagles fans are going to be there or not. There's always some Eagles fans. There's always some fans from any of the teams up north, whether it's the Giants or the Eagles or the Steelers or the Bears or the Packers. I've done whole shows on how I'm okay with that because, again, we live in a place that other people want to come live, and it's just a sign of that when we have games against teams from other cities. Nobody's moving from Tampa to Philadelphia. Nobody's moving from Tampa to Buffalo. Nobody's moving from Tampa to Pittsburgh. People move from Pittsburgh to Tampa. People move from Philly to Tampa. People move from anywhere up in the north and Midwest to here because this is a great place to live. So I take it as a badge of honor seeing all those opposing fans. I don't want to see too many of them. But if you're thinking about going to the game, I believe there are still some tickets, although I don't think it's a ton. Get out there and check it out. Great opportunity to tailgate. Should be a lot of fun. And either way, we'll be right back here next week to hash it all out. So that is the free stretch for week one going into week two, 2018. Again, bobbygameday@yahoo.com if you want to chime in. Thanks to Bill Curry Ford, our show sponsor. Thanks to the Joes for allowing me to be in front of all you all on what is the best website on the internet for Buccaneer coverage. And thanks to you for listening. I'm Bobby Fenton, and wherever you are, now as much as ever, good afternoon, good night, good evening, and go Bucks!